Rabbi Charles, welcome to Between the Lines podcast, and we very much look forward to exploring part with you today.
Thank you very much indeed. One of the things I always like to do when I sit down to look at a parasha is to see how it divides up, if indeed it does divide up. And Acharimot, which is Leviticus 16, verse 1 to 18, verse 30, divides really rather neatly into three different parts. The first part is chapter 16, verses 1 to 34. The second is 17, 1 to 16, which is all about slaughter and blood. And I'm sorry if you're listening to this around the time you're eating, but it's all about the importance of not eating blood. And as we know, that's a big taboo in Jewish tradition. And then the last part, chapter 18, verses 1 to 30, really the abomination of the Canaanites, and particularly the sexual abominations. It's a list of forbidden sexual unions. It includes bestiality and also no sex when a woman is menstruating. And it adds in, for good measure, child sacrifice to Molech, which I assume it does, because it was also a Canaanite practice. So that is the breakdown of the parasha. But what I want to do now is look at some aspects of the first part, that is 16:1 to 34, which describes the annual purification of the tabernacle, what we might call a really deep clean that includes unintentional wrongdoing and incomplete atonement. And of course, it won't surprise you that the date for this inner cleansing is the 10th of Tishri and is called Yom HaKippurim. And the plural perhaps suggests multiple acts of atonement. Fasting and not working, the Israelites emerged cleansed and with the sense that their relationship with God has had a reset. But there is one aspect of this whole day that is particularly significant, I think, and that is the ritual of the scapegoat. Just in case anyone wonders, if you're keen on derivations, the word scapegoat is first found in Tyndale's Bible in 1530, and it was a received pronunciation of escape goat. And of course, that leads us in to talking about the centrality of goats on Yom Kippur, which may come as a surprise. But of course, we know about the ritual of the scapegoat. One of them is sacrificed, the other one bears the sins of the people and is driven out into the wilderness to Azazel. And the rabbis interpreted this name as comprising two elements, Az, a goat, and Azazel, going away, so that it expresses succinctly the fate of the goat sent into the wilderness. Abraham ibn Ezra, whose dates are 1089 to 1167, commented that this was the name of a wilderness-dwelling demon or deity who would promise the goat's destruction. The symbolic transferring of the people's sins to the goat, which is then sent out into the desert, is a clear indication that the sins have been utterly cast out beyond the bounds of human habitation, of course, is one that had real mileage under its belt, unfortunately. And we have often been a scapegoat through iterations of our history in different countries. I don't want you to think that other more modern commentators don't find aspects of Arimot, and in fact, this Yom Kippur, a ritual that can be applied to modern issues. So in Yonatan Neril and Leo D's Eco-Bible, they use this first part of the Sidra as a vehicle for cleansing the air, paralleling the cleansing that comes from atonement. And they cite that very pithy quote of Abraham Joshua Heschel's, "In a free society, only some may be guilty, but all are responsible." If you look up scapegoat in a search engine, or as I did on Amazon, you'll find some interesting currencies. Books, The Scapegoat, a novel by Daphne du Maurier. Scapegoats, How Islamophobia Helps Our Enemies and Threatens Our Freedom, by Arsalan Iftikhar. Scapegoat, The Jews, Israel and Women's Liberation, by Andreas Dworkin. Scapegoat, Why We Are Failing Disabled People, by Catherine Quamby. And Family Scapegoats, A Hidden Epidemic, Are You the Scapegoat in Your Family, by Patricia Jones. Now, I just cite those because of the range of them and the fact that some of them have clearly seemed to have moved quite some from the biblical context. One of the things that, unfortunately, is part of human behavior, certainly in Europe, is the maltreatment and continuing maltreatment of animals in a very similar way to a scapegoat. They are deemed to either exemplify something negative or bad, or they are, if you like, almost a popular sacrifice. And we're thinking of bulls, of donkeys being thrown from high towers, hunting dogs being killed, quail, very peculiar, and also goats. Although unlike the biblical treatment of goats, these goats, again, dropped from a high tower. And as the scapegoat ritual is ultimately an act of transference, so one could say that these lamentable practices are a similar thing. Now, if you send something off to a demon, you can't be very invested in it. You have to feel very strongly against it. And I would argue that this is something which sadly all religions have shown in their history to what should be a very embarrassing level. That is to say, religions which preach and teach peace and respect for others also need to have someone to hate. I remember some of you may also, the great Tom Lehrer had a song called National Brotherhood Week, one of the lines of which said, the Catholics hate the Protestants and the Protestants hate the Catholics and the Hindus hate the Muslims and everybody hates the Jews. And it obviously drew a big on the recording from, I'm sure, a largely Jewish audience. But it is interesting how this element of hating others and scapegoating others fits in, resonates very much in many religions. A brief article I found in 2017 from the Pacific Standard magazine talked about the way involvement in a religious group can actually bring about a higher level of intolerance. I quote, the results suggest joining together with like-minded others and using rituals to affirm your bond can produce a distrust and dislike of others. Actual spiritual devotion negates these prejudicial impulses, but when that's lacking, they can drive one's beliefs and behaviors. So when it comes to religion and prejudice, it seems the problem is not the genuinely devout, but rather the hangers-on. And an article written by an academic at the University of California, Davis, says this, well worth thinking about, I think. To sever this connection between religion and violence is an important yet utopian goal that will depend on promoting peace with justice. More modestly, sociological studies of religion should develop reflexive knowledge that can help alter the channels and trajectories of violence and thus mitigate its tragic effects. These are both tasks worth our intellectual energies and our social commitment. Now, some of you may have concluded that I have strayed rather a long way from Ahare Mot and the goat being sent to Azazel. But I think it is possible, without having to try too hard, to make a connection between the almost demonization of the scapegoat and the ways in which other religions, including our own, marginalize and worse other people of different religious persuasions. So there's a very relevant, modern, up-to-the-minute interpretation of this text, which arguably is, for us, a very relevant one.
Thank you so much for your bringing it up to date in such a relevant way. I really wonder whether you've encountered other elements, either from biblical tradition or wider parts of our sources, which exemplify what you've brought out, particularly around the scapegoat.
Arguably, in my mind, would go straight to the whole Amalek tradition and the way in which the people of Amalek are effectively, I know it's a modern word, but I think it's legitimate here, are demonized. And as we have a special Shabbat to remind ourselves about loathing and wanting Amalek to be destroyed, and you almost don't need to go any further than that. But there's a lovely little comment by the great Spanish commentator Nachmanides, who's 12th, 13th century. And he writes on chapter 16, verse 8 in Acharei Mot. He says, and it's a surprising text, "This is all that can be explained without delving into the relationship of the spirits and the separate intelligences to the sacrifices. This can be known with regard to the spirits via the science of necromancy and with regard to the separate intelligences as well, from allusions made to them in the Torah for those who can understand their secrets." Well, so far, so quite surprising. But then he goes on, "I cannot discuss this any further, for we must stop up the mouths of those natural philosophers who follow the Greek," that is Aristotle, "who denied everything that he could not perceive with his senses, and was so presumptuous as to decide, he and his wicked disciples, that anything he could not derive logically could not be true." And you have there, it's quite in the caustic style of Nachmanides, but you have a gratuitous, very negative comment about the followers of Aristotle, which, you know, arguably is not really needed to make the point, but it's very hard to avoid it when you're criticizing someone who takes a very different perspective from your own, especially if you find it threatening, not to try and dismiss it by ridiculing it, by rubbishing it.
I suppose the wonderful tradition of Locket that we have is key to propelling the importance of argument and moving the tradition on. This notion of the scapegoat and like how it's evolved, like over.
I think that's almost a sociological study in itself. And we only really need to think about the way the word scapegoat is used. To, we talk about scapegoating and so on, to know that it is very current. But so far as the first part of what you said about Chloket, of course, we all know Chloket Shehila Shem Shamayim Sofa Lehitkayem, that a controversy or a disagreement, which is for a heavenly or a higher purpose, will have lasting value. And obviously the opposite is also, but I guess the pea in the mattress on that one is, it depends on how you define Lashem Shamayim. And no Jew, I think, would disagree with the principle, but then with the practice, it becomes a simple matter of whether your Lashem Shamayim is the same as somebody else's. And if not, then you have every right to make of your machloket machlakot.
Rabbi Charles, thank you so much for your exploration with us. And we do very much look forward to welcoming you again.
Thank you. It would be my pleasure.